the radio waves as we begin to burn it up. We all up in your area like landscape, definitely bringing you the power slam of pancakes. It's the mandate that you tune in. It's time to move out so we can move in and recognize that this is no illusion. I'm here to clear the air so that there is no confusion. It all started off in the book of Genesis when Jacob was wrestling with who he thought was his nemesis. And when the man saw he couldn't overpower him, he touched his hip but he really could have devoured him. And from that point, then we hear a name change, rearrange the game, so now we gotta change. So I'm here to let you know it's time to listen to the Pancake and Power Slam Show. Let's go!
Turn it up, turn it up. It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam Show.
It is the Pancakes and Power Slam Show. Thank you so much for listening. I am your host, Chris Featherstone, along always with my co-host, Ryan Fuqua.
Hello, good evening out there, Crave Wrestling fans.
We are excited about this evening, and if you watched Extreme Rules and Raw, I'm sure that, I guess, in essence, if you're listening to this show, I'm sure you're excited as well, because there's a lot to talk about. So we will be taking calls. Feel free to call in. If this is your first time, feel free to call in if you are a frequent listener. Thank you so much for continuing to support us. The number is 347-884-8452. Once again,
You already know what time.
347-884-8452. I guess the theme song was so good that I had to play again. Shout out to Eric Cross from One Route Entertainment with the Pancakes and Power Slams theme song. All right, let's go to Extreme Rules. Before we go there, we actually got two new segments that we're going to debut today. Very briefly, because we got so much to cover with what we saw at Extreme Rules. And the first segment we're going to do every week is called Last Week's Errors. So if you listened to the show last week and spotted some errors, we'll spot them too, and we'll say them. Last week we said that Beth Phoenix was legitimately injured. There's a lot of reports going on right now that she is not legitimately injured. It is a quote-unquote kayfabe in wrestling terms. It is not a real injury. She's doing it for storyline purposes. That's what I heard. That's what a lot of the reports are saying right now. I find absolutely no sense in that. The next era was the pay-per-views that we said. I believe I said, as far as putting Paul Bearer out, I believe I said it was SummerSlam. And Ryan said it was Survivor Series. It was actually the Great American Bash of 2004. I believe Ryan made reference of it as far as Nikki and Bree splitting a championship. I said Nikki has two championship runs, and I was incorrect. Nikki and Bree both has had a Divas title run. In this week's news, speaking of the Bellas, they are fired. Storyline, their contract actually expired, and they chose not to re-sign. I have a breaking news article up on Bleacher Report that I wrote last night during Raw, right when the news came out. Feel free to look at it, Chris Featherstone, Bleacher Report, and make a comment. There's a ton of comments there spanning from both sides. And Brock Lesnar, reportedly he was very livid at John Cena's promo after the Extreme Rules pay-per-view. Cena was reportedly supposed to be sent out on a stretcher, but he didn't. He cut a promo, and Brock Lesnar was not happy with it at all, and was storming in the back and was livid about it. So there's last week's errors, and that's this week's news. We will start with the Extreme Rules pay-per-view. Of course, if you listen to us participate in the live chat, or give us a call, 347-884-8452. And usually we do Raw, SmackDown, Impact Wrestling, and Ring of Honor. But, you know, we don't know how far we'll get, seeing how there's a lot to cover with Extreme Rules. So we'll go to the first match here. Kane versus Randy Orton, Falls Count Anywhere match. It started off good, decent. Randy Orton gets the win on that. I guess in hindsight, it was good that Randy Orton. I preferred Kane, but you know, Randy Orton. I guess propelling him to the world title picture, maybe on SmackDown. I guess in essence, it was probably okay for him to win. A couple of things I want to highlight on this match. The backstage moment where they went into the backstage, it was clearly staged. They started screaming in sync. It was just it just seemed very, very staged. And then Zack Ryder, his spot was just kind of sympathetic to me. I had some sympathy to him because he started beating up on Kane's back, and he just. It was to no avail. Seemingly, it's going to end the feud. I don't see how it will continue the feud at all. It doesn't make sense. And then the RK on the chair is how it finished. But still, no chair shots to the head. So yeah, I was really interested on these. You can't do chair shots to the head, but you can do an elbow drop and hit somebody's head, or do an RKO to the on the chair. So I don't see the difference.
Yeah, me either. I a little bit of a laugh out loud moment when I said, "Oh man, Orton should still be fined for that." But no, this was actually for the opener. You know. A little exciting, I guess, until, as you said, they went in the back. It was kind of lame. As you said, you could tell how scripted it was. But actually, just for this being the opener, they got extreme pretty early with the lead pipe spilled out in the crowd real soon. Ryder was actually a pretty okay run-in, but, yeah, that's his little claim to fame on a pay-per-view probably for a long time. But I think how aggressively they beat each other up, and then with Orton winning now, so they split Mania and Extreme Rules. I think this feud is pretty much over. I mean, I would hope it would be over. So, grabbing a steel chair isn't what it used to be either, man. It's every time they grab one now, you're like, uh oh, where's the headshot or face shot to the chair going to come from? You know, they kind of find a way to do it without swinging it. But overall, this match was okay. So they split, so pretty sure they're moving on.
Yeah. The only thing is, you know, they split, but in essence, Orton's up, well, two, really, because of the match last year of how this all started, I guess. And then they had a match on the subsequent SmackDown. I believe it was like some type of no DQ match or something like that, and Orton won right after the pay-per-view. So I really didn't see the point of having that match if Orton was going to win the Extreme Rules match. It was a good match on SmackDown, but you know, it's just driving Kane further to the ground, post resurrection. It's just not really helping him at all. So let's go forward here to Brodus Clay versus Dolph Ziggler. The match was good for Clay. But it's just really sad what we're seeing of Dolph Ziggler these days. It's really tough, really, really tough. It just doesn't make any sense at all. for Dolph Ziggler to just be in this type of situation, this type of predicament in his career, where the Royal Rumble, this past Royal Rumble, he was in the main event versus CM Punk, and just what a difference a year makes, or what a difference, really 6 months makes, or 5 months makes, really, in Dolph Ziggler's career. And the reason why I said what a difference a year makes, because it seems like he's fallen into that trap, too. I wrote an article in the Bleacher Report about Extreme Rules 2011 to Extreme Rules 2012, and the top five wrestlers that's fell off. So for all the listeners and out there, feel free to check that out. But it's sad what we see from Dolph Ziggler these days. He deserves much, much better for the talent that he has.
Yeah, I don't understand it. I mean, the only thing I can think of is maybe he's in some sort of trouble right now. I don't understand how the creative team doesn't see the optimism, the promise in his future. But, yeah. As for the match, Hornswoggle in Clay's corner, I actually was okay with that. As long as they're not tagging up, I'm cool with it, I guess. I mean, it goes with what Brodus Clay is doing, so that's okay. A lot of people at ringside, five total at ringside, so that was pretty crazy.
Lumberjack
but actually for Clay,
match.
Man. Yeah, actually for Clay, I got to say, man, he held it down on his in-ring work, man. He's a big athletic guy, so, and I don't even have to say that Dolph carried the match or anything. I mean, I think I wouldn't be opposed to seeing more longer matches of Clay, man. I think they could maybe do him as a serious face. So we may not have to call his mama much longer.
Nice little plug there. Yeah. We will go forward here to Big Show versus Cody Rhodes in a tables match. It was a weird ending. Looks like Show was attempting to go into the ring. And Cody Rhodes kicked his leg and kind of whipped his leg back and down. He stepped down into a table, and that's how it ended. And to win the match, of that type of nature, it doesn't seem like Cody Rhodes would put him through a table. So if they wanted to have that type of weird ending, I guess if they knew that, of course it Cody Rhodes is booked to win, so I guess that ending, made one of the most possible senses, but it still didn't make much sense, if that makes sense. And then at the end, he chokeslams Cody, and he throws him, he gorilla presses him through another table. Chicago is definitely the heel heavy crowd. I was imagining a Demolition and Powers of Pain or Lex Luger Barry Windham double turn episode here from Show and Cody, and it seemed like Show was kind of feeding into it, all the boos that he was having, and of course, Cody didn't really feed into the face pops that he got. He kind of still, sold it, as far as the heel is concerned. And I really hope they don't run with this, because Cody Rhodes, just as a face, not yet. I mean, I can see him being a successful face down the line, but definitely not yet. He needs to be one of the top heels on SmackDown to eventually feud with a bigger name like a Sheamus, or reviving a Randy Orton feud or something to that nature.
Yeah, I'll agree. Rhodes, if he was to turn face, that would set his character back. He definitely wouldn't be world title ready. And then Show, too. Show going heel would do nothing for his career at this point. I mean, the fans are behind him. So it's no point to turn Show heel. So hopefully he was just feeding into it just for that night. But this one, the match had more action afterwards than during, so that was a little awkward. Actually, I mean, they booked up a good finish, just not for this feud. I mean, I thought Show should have retained, so for me, it didn't work. But, I mean, they booked a good finish there, so I'm okay with that. I just hope this time around, as IC champ, hopefully Rhodes defends the title a little more.
Yeah, that was my biggest thing as far as him having the title. When he first won it, I believe back in October of last year, it was pretty. You know, he had a few. He had a few good reigns as far as defenses and things like that. But you know, other than that, yeah, it just wasn't, you know, worthwhile. I wasn't active at all. So, well, hopefully, like you said, it'll be like that. So, I got some good conversations going in the chat room right now. Feel free to log in to the chat. Call in 347-884-8452. Got Sean giving us an interesting stat here as far as Triple H is concerned. He says that Sean Mates, a former creative team writer, mentioned on Twitter earlier how Triple H normally takes down the hot guy of the summer. He gave some stats here. Kurt Angle in 2000, RVD in 02, Orton in 04, Carlito in 07, and Punk last year, and this year possibly Brock Lesnar. So that's a very, very interesting stat. If I'm not mistaken,
yeah.
I wouldn't really consider him a quote-unquote hot guy, but I believe he defeated Kali in 09 or something of that nature, 08 or 09. He defeated Kali. So very interesting point there. I'm very intrigued to see where that's going to go. We'll get to that here later. So we're going to take some calls real soon here. We're going to go through the Extreme Rules, and we'll be thanks for everybody for holding who's waiting for to be on air here, and we'll go to the next match. Daniel Bryan versus Sheamus, 2 out of 3 falls. It was a decent match. Sheamus gets some heel heat. Again, I guess you kind of get that with everybody who goes against, you know, Daniel Bryan, just because of the yes chances. Everybody has is the crave now. So, you know, Sheamus wins. As we saw, the day after, I guess it all makes sense in hindsight, and it was a decent match. A lot of people believe that it was the match of the night. I personally don't believe it was the match of the night, it was in the top three, I would say.
Oh yeah, first thing I thought is, why couldn't we have this match at Mania? Not so much the 2 out of 3, but just, you know, one fall match, just showcasing how they work. Because I thought this match, well, I agree, pretty awesome, but not the match of the night. I liked how they laid into each other, made it seem like they really had hatred for each other. And that was how the first fall was by DQ. That was a good way to sell their dislike for each other, so that was pretty cool. Thought the second fall was okay. You can get away with that in the 2 out of 3 falls match where Sheamus just passed out. But as for the finish, just predictable bro kick, so I wasn't feeling that. But overall, I mean, I like this match a lot. I definitely had to say at least a 7 out of 10.
Mm-hmm. Yep, it was, you know, to be a 2 out of 3 falls match, you know, it was good to bring that quote unquote throwback match up again. So then we go to the Ryback. He defeats 2 local jobbers, and the only thing that I got from that is people started chanting Goldberg, and it seemed like that was inevitable. that was going to come. You know, I'm surprised that Goldberg and you know, doesn't sue him for infringement, or RVD, one or the other.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. So, but yeah, that's all I got from that. You know, I like Ryback, but it's starting to get a little tough for me because they're not booking this at all. You know, they're not booking him good at all. You know, I thought they've already learned about what the squash matches do, and really, hopefully, you know, they don't make a mistake with him.
Yeah, maybe one day I'll be on the Ryback bandwagon. I could see a little promise, but first off, he's just got to get rid of the blatant ripoff of the RVD suits. I can't get down with those. And then I feel like I've liked the jobbers more each week than I've liked Ryback. So that's not a good thing. But congrats to the two jobbers for getting on not a Raw or a SmackDown, but a pay-per-view. I mean, that's pretty huge. And then that's really it. Maybe one day, but for right now, I don't know. I just can't get down with them.
Yeah, it's getting tougher and tougher. So next we got Chris Jericho versus CM Punk, Chicago Street Fight. Personally, this is the match of the night for me. Actually, this is one of the best in Extreme Rules history. Jericho puts over Punk again. This is 4 straight pay-per-view losses for him. Now, here's the thing. It gets even worse because the last singles pay-per-view that he won was WrestleMania 26, April of 2010. Wow. And that's what makes it even crazier to me. And, you know, he left in 2010, but I don't know if a lot of people, he was in two tag matches, multiple 5-on-5 or 4-on-4, I don't remember what it was, but they were feuded with the Nexus at that time, and he was on Team Raw, and I mean, he won those matches, but I believe they won one of them. I don't remember the. But as far as the singles is concerned, he lost to, get this, guys. Callers, are you ready? Evan Bourne at Fatal 4-Way. And I watched the match. I remember the match. In hindsight, I remember the match. And, you know, I was just baffled then. And when I watched the match, actually I watched it today, and it was a really good match, but just really, I mean, Jericho puts over Bourne. That goes to show to me, you know, how amazing to me how Jericho is as far as a worker is concerned. He's willing to put over anybody, you know, that he sees potential in. You know, I will say this to this day, John Cena needs to give Jericho all the credit in the world for propelling his career because he was the first person that decided, you know, to really put him over. So
yeah, for sure. Yeah. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Oh yeah, for the this one, man, the entrances were electric. The crowd was into it. I mean, it was 2 good superstars. They just beat the crap out of each other. But, I mean, it was still a wonderful match. I mean, like you said, match of the night. Like, and then, once again, I don't know how they do it, but these two had roped me in within the last 7 to 5 minutes of the match, making me think, okay, Jericho can win this one. Jericho might win this one. But of course not. I love the finishes that these two have put on at Mania and ER. But I will say that this Extreme Rules match was way better than their Mania match, only because less hype for the match. So, but yeah, these finishes, man, it's they get me. They get me.
Yeah, I would definitely say that the expectation was a little lowered, so you know the outcome was a little better as far as what we saw. So, Beth Phoenix not cleared to wrestle, so we get a mystery opponent. Just about everybody thought it was Karma. One of the Bellas even said, you know, it's not Karma, and you know. I personally thought that they were just trying to swerve us, and she was still going to come out. Layla comes out to everybody's surprisement and surprise, and she wins the title. No disrespect to Layla, I like Layla. No problems at all with her. The only problem is that the hype was on Karma. So those were really big shoes to fill. And to have Layla come out with everybody was expecting Karma, I think it's a disservice to Layla. Just because, and I wrote an article about it on Bleacher Report, a lot of people didn't really understand. I covered what I'm saying now with the Bella Twins article. The thing is this. No disrespect to Layla, like I said, she's a great talent, and I'm for Layla. Just it's tough for Layla to fill those shoes. You know that Karma, it's big shoes to fill with Karma. Everybody's expecting Karma, and for her to come out, it really fell flat. With just the audience and really the viewers as well.
I mean, you're right. It's not her fault. They built this up for Karma for forever. You know, like it's been a year in the making. I mean, when Karma left, she was feuding with the Bellas. So I mean, it's only seemed right. So not Layla's fault, but I don't know, man. Layla just. Something seems off. I don't know if it's because she was such a dominant heel for so long with McCool. I don't really want to use the word dominant, but just they were good at what they did, I guess. Mm-hmm. Just being this face now, I don't know. Something doesn't seem right about it. But, yeah, I figured it'd be Layla if it wasn't Karma. So I actually called that out to you when we were watching this. So,
yeah.
Props to me.
Yeah, you did. Yeah. You did call it out. I will give that to you. Got some chat going on in chat room. Feel free to log in and chat. Call in 347-884-8452. We will be taking calls real soon. Covering this Extreme Rules here. And then the last match we ended with Brock Lesnar versus John Cena. Brock Lesnar with his UFC gear. That didn't surprise me at all. We saw an MMA Lesnar gives Cena elbow shot to the head and busts his head open with the elbow shot and just really shoot style. At the end, we saw Lesnar after getting pummeled throughout the match. He basically gives Lesnar an Achilles heel with the chain that he got, he gets Cena wins. He gets some sympathy pops and he wins with attitude adjustment on the steps. And then we get the Cena post match promo. We got, like I said, with today's, you know, with this week's news, Cena was reportedly supposed to be on sent out on a stretcher, and so instead we saw him cut a promo. And we were trying to figure out, like, you know, Vince is going to be mad at me. He was alluding to that. You know, he was making references of Vince McMahon being upset with him and making fired or something like that. And we were just like, you know, wondering, like, okay, we're just cutting a promo. Like, it's not that serious. But in essence, you know, in hindsight, you know, we're like, okay, well, I could see why he did that, or he said that, because definitely wasn't supposed to happen that way. So it was a brutal match. I really don't know what my take is on it still. One thing I do know is that it really made for what I saw, and initially I thought that it made the WWE product as a whole and John Cena look really weak, because I was sharing with someone who I was with watching the show that Brock Lesnar wasn't like a Mount Rushmore, one of the, you know, elite people, you know, in the UFC. He won a championship, but, you know, his last couple of matches he lost to Cain Velasquez and Alistair Overeem. So, you know, and his first match, I believe, was Frank Mir, and he lost, or one of his first matches. And so he wasn't a dominant guy, you know, in the UFC. And to come and just do that to John Cena, it just kind of really made the product look weak to me. And I didn't like really how they booked that. If Cena would have had a little bit more offense, maybe my mind would change. But yeah, it really didn't do the product any type of service or any type of benefit to me.
Yeah, I'll agree, because I mean, seeing this character as of late, I'm not sure where they're going with this. So even though he won the match, like we said, he took a beating. He got dominated. So what does that say for other superstars down the road? Like, when they face Lesnar, you're automatically saying they're not going to win because Cena's your top dog. But I'll talk about that later with the flavor of the week. But as for this one, I mean, like we said, not feeling Lesnar's gear. Actually, it was pretty cool to see Cena rocking the chain gang for this feud. And then actually how they used the chain during the match a little bit. Guess they're still selling Brock as a UFC-style fighter. I don't know. I wonder, do you think Cena told Brock to just lay into him like that with that elbow so soon and the cutting moment?
It wouldn't surprise me. It wouldn't surprise me. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, just not feeling the beat down, but I guess it was for the future of Cena's character and the storyline. Also, this wasn't the usual family-rated WWE as of late, you know, with the no blood and everything. This is real quick, just maybe off subject, but I think they should go to maybe like I've seen somebody say a TV-14 instead of the family PG thing, because they're contradicting themselves each week, it seems like. But like I said, that's another topic. We'll talk about that, I'm sure, within the upcoming weeks. but no ref for most of the match was weird. Like, it was an extreme rules match, so the ref couldn't stop the match for anything, so you didn't need to. And I guess it was just to sell Lesnar's being a bully, knock out a ref or two. But other than that, Lesnar's out of shape, and Cena finally wins, but at what expense?
Yeah. Exactly. we're actually going to take a call here. Just state your name and where you're from and your thoughts. We have a 614 area code. Are you on?
I am on. I know. I'm not sure if you're referring to me or not.
Yes. Go right ahead.
And I didn't necessarily have anything in particular that I wanted to comment on, but I've been listening to you guys, and I actually didn't even get a chance to catch the pay-per-view, unfortunately, but it doesn't really sound like I missed too much of anything that was surprising either. So I'm really excited to see Brock Lesnar back. And I know he's out of shape and all that stuff too, but it is pretty good to see the guy back. I don't know how long it's going to last for. I'd had this conversation just with you earlier. I think you were saying you're predicting maybe about another year, or I'm sorry, by the end of Mania, and probably not going to renew the contract with WWE after that. And it may or may not happen. I don't know. Hopefully they can come to terms and get some stuff going. But, yeah, I don't know. The whole Layla ordeal, I'm just kind of like, man, who cares? And no offense to her either, again, but who cares? Karma should have been, obviously would have been the better choice, just like you guys had stated. And the whole Cena ordeal, I don't know. He's been stale to me for quite some time, probably to a lot of other people too. But I guess it's cool that he got his win in. And, you know, I don't know. Not sure the direction they're going either. It's the whole Cena ordeal. I don't get it.
Yeah, thanks so much for the call. From Raw, I think that the Raw really messed it up too, and we'll get to that real soon as far as how everything just kind of switched even more, made even more of a confusion with Raw. So yeah, it's a good segue to Raw here. Laurinaitis opens up with the promo, introduces Lesnar. Triple H comes out shortly after, and then he cancels the addendum to the contract where they had what Lesnar said last week with all the additions to the contract. Eventually, before this happened, before what I'm about to say happened, interesting little point here. He acknowledges the possible opponent. So I think that he might have been looking at our tweets or something about the flavor of the week. he talks about Punk, Orton, and Sheamus, and it's interesting. Seemed like he broke kayfabe a little bit because for him to say, you know, Brock Lesnar's future opponents is kind of taboo, you know, when it comes to the storyline building and writing of the WWE. Eventually, he gets attacked by Brock Lesnar, and he eventually, when he mounts, he actually takes him down and snaps his arm with a Kimura lock. Seemingly, this is a build up for SummerSlam. Just wouldn't make sense for it to be like a pay-per-view from now because Michael Cole said that he did quote-unquote break his arm. So it does set up a good timeline as far as it being indefinite because you know how the WWE is. Zack Ryder broke his back, you know, quote-unquote, and, you know, he came back, fully healed in a few months, and that's not really what happens in real life. He quote unquote broke his arm, so that's a good timeline set up for SummerSlam, which a lot of, you know, was what rumored for that to be, as far as Lesnar and Triple H. I'm cool with Lesnar and Triple H, actually. I guess if anybody could compete with him physically, you know, as far as stature-wise, it would be Brock Lesnar. And they really, you know, it seemed like they were going to have that feud back in 02 when Triple H won his title and Brock Lesnar, he won the Undisputed title. It seemed like they were kind of teasing that feud back in 02. Actually, around SummerSlam, you know, August, September time, so I guess it would be a 10-year anniversary of that, which is interesting. but they never got to it. So it would be interesting to see them feud against each other. The only thing is, which is something that I'm going to actually quote from the chat room. Sean is saying, you know, wondering, kind of like I'm doing too, why is Triple H back? He says, what happened to the end of an era? I kind of wonder about that too. We had a comment that you know, one person thought it was the Undertaker's era, but you know, I guess essentially it is, you know, but at the same time, it seemed like it was just the send-off. That's one of them Ric Flair, Shawn Michaels send-offs to me. It was just like one of the best send-offs in WrestleMania history. You know, Michaels are retired. You know, Taker is just, you know, extremely part-time, and it would just make sense for Triple H to just kind of hang it up too. But I guess from what we see right now, it would make sense for Lesnar to go against Triple H, if you know, since what we saw, you know, was just him pummeling Cena. And I also read some reports of the WWE may have even, with what we saw with, you know, Lesnar getting upset with Cena cutting the promo, Lesnar may even be used to put over talent for the rest of the year, which Lesnar, of course, wouldn't. He would be very unhappy with, but he did sign the contract, so I guess legally, you know, if they tell him to put over someone, he would just have to put him over, unless, you know, he's willing to breach it. So that would just, you know, there's from what we're seeing and what we're hearing, you know, I don't see anything post WrestleMania 29, but I guess if he's already put himself, you know, in the hole, you know, why not put over talent while he's here? So
yeah. speaking of the end of an era thing, I think it was the end of the Triple H and a T-shirt and jeans era. So now it's maybe the start of Triple H and a suit management era. So
yeah,
maybe that's why he's hanging out. But yeah, they had to do this opener, like you said, one for promoting a match down the road. Didn't take the power away from Brock, so it wasn't Monday Night Raw featuring Brock Lesnar in the limo and the Jets. And plus, you didn't want to give him a quick build-up in 3 weeks for an over-the-limit match. But this was okay. I was really okay with this because, like we said, I think this is the first and really only kind of interaction, physical interaction, that Tripp and Lesnar have ever had. So I am intrigued by this, and actually can't wait to see how this plays out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, it'll be interesting. We'll see how that goes. So we go to Eve announcing the Beat the Clock Challenge concept of the evening to determine the number one contender for CM Punk's WWE title at Over the Limit. Before I go to the first match, Eve still doesn't have it on the mic. She still has the little the little flash poses, kind of like, you know, the flash photography and Edge and Christian, and it's just too much acting to me. Like, she just, it's not natural, not yet. And yeah, so that's what I have to say about Eve. Beat the Clock Challenge number one was The Miz versus Santino. The Miz beat Santino and 4 minutes and 18 seconds. It was a good miss. It was a good win for The Miz. He much needed. If he would have lost to Santino again, it just really would have been you know, like you said last week, you know, near the future endeavor list. It just would have been really, really bad if he did that. So it was a good one for him, much needed.
Yeah, I was welcome back to Monday nights for the Miz. I'll agree. Just really glad to see him win. I was glad to hear his entrance music. But I thought after seeing the YouTube pre-show match at ER and in this match, these two work well together. And like I said, I think they just need to stick Miz to the mid-card level because, I mean, he's not going to get TV time on the main event level. So he just needs to get in where he fits in. And yeah. I can deal with that.
Maybe this time they'll give Alex Riley a shot since they already gave Miz a shot. So
yeah.
Call in with your Raw thoughts, 347-884-8452. We're recapping Raw right now, and feel free to call in with your Raw thoughts. Layla defeats the Bellas in a triple threat Divas title match in a matter of seconds. And so we just basically I just played into the WWE.com exclusive video that they showed with Eve firing the Bellas. We'll discuss the Bellas another day as far as how relevant they are or aren't. Like I said, feel free to check out my article on Bleacher Report. There's a long list of opinions on how people feel about the Bella Twins. So we'll talk about that another time. Beat the Clock Challenge number 2, Jericho and the Big Show. They didn't beat the clock, but they kind of did because Big Show was clearly counted out in time, but there was a miscue with the ref, and I mean, it took him like 25 seconds to count to 10. I mean, that's normal with a lot of refs. It's just not a solid 10 count. It's hardly ever a solid 10 count. But this one was just a miscue, and then they went to commercial break, try to pan it out, and it just was really weird to me how it all panned out. So.
Yeah, I don't know, like you said, botch spot, or if they plan this to later on down the line have Brian and Jericho wrestle a match, and, you know, because we have Jericho and Punk on the Over the Limit poster, so that's kind of weird, so I don't know. And then it's funny, too, because that ref was usually refs the Divas matches. I said to myself, like, wow, why is he doing the Superstars instead of the Divas? But don't be surprised if somehow Jericho weasels his way into that main event at OTL.
Yeah, that would be interesting. There's actually an article written on Bleacher Report. I don't remember the person's name. Is actually talking. Actually wrote about an angle they should do with Jericho and Orton leading to the summertime, which would be a pretty interesting angle if they did it. But to me, I still want Jericho to be in the title picture just because he's put Punk over so much, and it's just unnecessary. Punk doesn't need to. He doesn't need to be a better, you know, wrestler, or doesn't need to grow in stature as far as popularity. He already was actually, if anything, his popularity diminished a little bit during this feud because, you know, SummerSlam of last year, Money in the Bank of last year, around that time, he was just an invincible, you know, character. So, if anything, it's diminished. So, it just wouldn't make sense to me to keep putting him over. Brodus Clay defeated JTG in a squash match. The only thing that I, two things that I got from this, no Hornswoggle, and the kids at the end was a nice little kind gesture that actually helped out Brodus Clay's gimmick. If he keeps doing that, he'll you know, get the support from the kids. He probably already do, he'll get more support from the kids, and I'm sure that'll help sell some merchandise.
Yeah. Wow, I was shocked. I didn't know JTG was still on roster, so that one shocked me. A little disappointed that Hornswoggle wasn't out there with him. As I stated earlier, I like those two. But back to the quick squashes for the old Funkasaurus. I wonder why he couldn't participate in the Beat the Clock Challenge, because he definitely would have won it all.
Yeah, that's exactly why.
Him or Ryback.
Yeah, and Brodus Clay at CM Punk.
I like Clay, but not that much. Yeah.
Not quite. Beat the Clock Challenge 3 was Randy Orton defeating Jack Swagger. He beats the Miz's time by 2 seconds. I was a fan of this match. I charisma wise, not so much, but Swagger, he's a heck of a wrestler, and he'll put on a clinic because he's a good wrestler, and I still think that they should give him a shot. I mean, you know, not necessarily main event, but I mean, to be honest with you, I actually wouldn't have been opposed to Jack Swagger winning the whole thing, because you know you have to consider the throwaway pay-per-views. Over the Limit had the lowest numbers of last year. It was the worst pay-per-view of 2011. So most likely it will be another throwaway pay-per-view. So why not put Swagger in that type of pay-per-view? And they're going to deliver a good match. So I don't, you know, Randy Orton wins. I guess it left people suspicious to or it left some suspense to see if we really was going to see Orton and Punk, and we found out later what happened with that. So, but you know, I'm a fan of Swagger's potential. His charisma is not good at all, but I like him in the ring.
Yeah, different color singlet for him, but I still wasn't feeling it. But I'll agree, I'm definitely a fan of Swagger's. Like, I can say I like him more now than I did about 2 or 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Thought Ziggler would have got this spot, but I'm guessing since he lost the night before, Sunday night, that's probably why they didn't want to put him there. And this was the second Beat the Clock match of the night that had two former World Heavyweight Champions, with the show Jericho one being the first. So that was pretty cool. Yeah, more Super Show confusion, because at this point when Orton won, I was like, wow, Randy has a chance to take the WWE title back to SmackDown, and right now even Daniel Bryan does. So, yeah, just a little more Super Show confusion.
Yeah. Hashtag Super Show. We haven't heard in a while.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we saw the WWE Tag Team Championship match between Primo and Epico against R-Truth and Kofi Kingston. There's no name to them yet, but we've got to figure something out, because they are the new WWE Tag Team Champions. Primo and Epico are on this losing streak. I don't quite understand that. The Primo and Epico, that you make them tag team champions, and Kofi was a recipient of their win. He was with Evan Bourne at the time. But, they win the tag team titles, and they hardly ever get it. You know, they hardly ever defend it on, you know, a Raw or a SmackDown. It was good for them to lose, although I don't believe that it was a good idea for them to just run the tag team championships, you know, down on the ground. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So yeah, that's the, I have to say this quote right quick. Sean's here in the chat room. Feel free to go in the chat room. There's some discussion going on in there. We were talking about the Beat the Clock Challenge. He said that there was like 3 to 4 SmackDown guys in the Beat the Clock Challenge, and he's a proponent of them pulling the brand split, and he's basically saying the Super Show, and there's only one GM, but he says there's only one GM unless you count the laptop that's still in hibernation. That's pretty funny. So So technically there's co-GMs right now. So that would be pretty interesting if we heard the Apple sound come out again. The tag team title match, it was needed. The title change was needed because we'll see more exposure on. We'll see more exposures of the titles now.
Yeah. Only thing for me, I mean, congrats to the new tag champs, but I would have rather seen, like, the Usos win because I'm so high on them. Hate to steal anything from Truth and Kofi, but I'd rather those two just go do their own thing and have the Usos win it. Maybe they could have did it during the pay-per-view. I don't know. That would have been way better. But as for Epico and Primo, I was real high on them, liked them, but I think it's Epico is the one I like more. Primo, I don't know, maybe falling off the wayside for me. But other than Truth and Kofi getting the titles, to me this match was weak. But my only thinking is, don't be surprised if Kofi and Truth have a feud somewhere down the line in the future after they drop the title.
Yeah, I was thinking that too.
And
if anything, maybe a Kofi turn. I don't want to see Truth turn again. They tried it. They did it, you know, and the little Jimmy thing is getting over as far as merchandise is concerned, and the kids like it, and, you know, I'm cool with the little Jimmy thing. A Kofi turn would just be very odd to me. I'm not going to totally disqualify it just because we haven't seen it yet, but I was thinking about that as it's interesting that you say that. I was thinking the same thing when Kofi came out, and I was like, okay, so are we still, if he turns, do we keep the music? Do we keep the triple pyro, boom, boom, boom? Do we keep the pirouette, you know, spin around, you know, into the pyro? I mean, do we keep all that? You know, I mean, if he becomes a heel, and I don't think so, because that would be very odd. He wouldn't really get over as a heel if he kept those gestures and all that. So it would be interesting to just do a total. It would have to be a complete overhaul for Kofi Kingston if they choose to do that turn. AEW tries to recruit Primo and Epico after again backstage they cut it off they cut it off to have the Great Khali dancing off beat as he always does. I never get that. He totally dances off beat, like he does the whole little hand thing, and it's like off all the time, and I'm like, just kind of, you know, synchronize yourself to just one, you know, beat that's dropping. I don't understand how that is possible. You're talking about the world champions. These are two former world champions here. Since there were three three matches with former world heavyweight champions. They didn't beat the clock. It was just a very slow, sluggish type of match. And just think, 2007, this was a WrestleMania match. That was very, very interesting there. That's all I have to say about that match. It was pretty sluggish.
Yeah, no contest. It was pointless. I don't know. They could have just had somebody else for Kane, but I guess they just wanted to have these two big guys and be slow so they wouldn't beat the clock. Part of the story for the night.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing else for me.
Yeah. We saw number five. We saw Daniel Bryan against Jerry Lawler comes out. That was, and I was thinking, you know, I got a soft spot in my heart for Lawler, but you know, it wasn't going to be Lawler and Punk, of course.
Yeah.
So yeah, that just doesn't make sense at all. So I was thinking of people who could have filled this spot. Now I thought of Riley was my first option. But in essence, there's no mid-card or upper-mid-card faces to really,
yeah,
you know, fit that spot, because you have Alberto Del Rio that we didn't see, interestingly enough.
Yeah.
We didn't see Alberto Del Rio. And yeah, we didn't see Ziggler, you know, but they're both heels. Didn't see Christian. I think he's cleared now. You know, he's a heel. So there's three heels here that I just mentioned, and there's no, like, suitable babyface other than the – and don't really count Kali. So, in essence, really have Big Show, I guess you can say Santino, and throw out Kali and then throw out Lawler. So really Show and Santino and Orton. So it makes it a little tougher. It makes me realize, like, wow, they really do need some baby faces. Like they just really across the board. Cause you know, I just named three heels and include Cody Rhodes with that too. And Miz. So that's five heels right there. And so they need a face to really shine come the summertime. There's some really loose negotiations going on right now, reported that John Morrison might come back down the line. And there's actually some reports going on what's his name? Crystal Marshall.
Bobby Lashley.
Bobby Lashley, yeah.
Yeah.
There's some talks that he may come back down the line, maybe this year. So, Lashley and Lesnar match, that would be pretty interesting to me. I would actually prefer that, honestly, just because from what we're seeing in Lesnar, I mean, I don't see a really marquee spot for him going into Mania. I'll see it one of the top spots, but not the spot. And I think that, you know, since they both do MMA now, maybe even a shoot-style MMA match between Lashley and Lesnar would be pretty interesting to see. So we saw a sumo match between Aki Bono and Sho. You know, we can get anything. So, yeah. I mean, Daniel Bryan wins. Hashtag Super Show, for sure, because Daniel Bryan is SmackDown vying for the WWE title. But, of course, this is going to be a clinic. This is going to be an amazing match. Doing it over the limit, I don't know how I feel about that. I think I would have preferred Money in the Bank, which is in July. No Way Out is June. It doesn't seem like this feud is going to go too far, just because I think that they may still want to keep Bryan on SmackDown. But, you know, if anything, Money in the Bank is starting to become a pretty solid and intriguing pay-per-view. I think that would have been a good place to put it at. But like I said, Swagger in this position would have been perfect to me because, like I said, Over the Limit is a throwaway pay-per-view. It just would have made sense to me. Of course, you know, I'll like what I see with Daniel Bryan and CM Punk. I know, you know, it's going to have ROH written all over it. It's going to be a great match, but I think they could have built that a little better.
Yeah. I'm more anxious to see how the crowd reacts to these two at OTL because I know Punk is the voice of the voiceless, but that crowd will not be voiceless with the yes chants. So two guys. I mean, I know it's a heel in the face, but they both have the crowd in the palm of their hands. So,
oh yeah,
and then with their history, this should actually be fun. So fun. This will show us how much CM Punk is over and how much influence he has on the fans. So I'm okay with this. Just wondering where Sheamus goes. I guess we'll find out Friday. So
I don't look at the spoilers on purpose. Just so we can enjoy the mystery of SmackDown, especially for the show. We don't want to spoil the listeners out there. We'll see what happens with Sheamus. If anything, I would suspect Alberto Del Rio. He seemed like he's on a decline as well. But so we end the show with John Cena coming out. Cuts a little promo saying that he's cleared to wrestle. Leonidas comes out, John Cena does a nice Zeus No Holds Barred reference. Shout out to the traditionalists out there that actually watched No Holds Barred back in the late 80s. So, so Leonidas comes out. He eventually introduces Laura Tensai, and it's interesting that he introduces them, but the music comes on too soon, so that typical Laurinaitis there. But we got a huge swerve. He ends up getting cornered by Tensai and Sakamoto, and gets kind of blindsided by Laurinaitis. And, we saw some old dynamic dudes, sheep herders, back in the day, Johnny Ace type of, all Japan pro wrestling all over again. I was very, I saw some aggression there in the knee shots and everything that he was doing, and he kind of whipped himself to the to the ropes and did the boots and stuff. I said, oh wow, he's got a little bit left there, because he kind of played it, he kind of sold it when he was feuding with Teddy Long, but he was kind of playing the weak role, but he's got some fire left in that. I believe he's like 45 now, I believe, and if I'm not mistaken, maybe a year or two, give or take. And he's still got a little bit left in him. I don't know where this is leading. It's confusing to me, because CM Punk and Laurinaitis was the big thing, and there's a question on the chat line asking if we considered Punk's run last summer a success. I definitely think it was a success. It was actually, I actually thought it was the peak of Punk's career. Money in the Bank and SummerSlam, both of the, I would say the summer of 2011 was the height of CM Punk's career. The feud was originally Punk and Laurinaitis, and they were teasing a match between them at Elimination Chamber. But now we're seeing Laurinaitis and Cena. There's not really any history between the two. So I guess maybe essentially we're still going to see Tensai in some capacity. I'm a bit confused about this. It's got about 2 weeks to pan out. Actually, the 20th is over the limit, so it's got about 3 weeks to pan out. I'm interested to see how this is going to pan out.
Yeah, a lot of explaining to do in the next 3 weeks. But for this ending promo, I just I really balked that Cena's arm was messed up or whatever until this segment, just like I balked that Beth Phoenix was hurt last week.
yeah.
Way more love for Cena tonight, or last night, way more love. Wow. And then I love how he clarified the difference between being hurt and injured. I think he was maybe shooting on some guys in the back. That might have been an inside thing, and somebody should probably tell Henry and Mysterio that.
Yeah.
And then I love yeah, and I love how he played to the what. I thought we said yes now instead of what. I thought what was over. I thought yes was the new what.
Yeah. I was hoping that at least.
yeah. I know it'll really feel like it's Tensai versus Cena, but man, we'll see what old Johnny Boy has in store. Come
yeah.
OTL.
yeah,
guess they don't want to have to make Cena put Tensai over again, and then they probably don't want Tensai to lose yet, so they had to go this route. So, but yeah, lots of explaining in the next few weeks.
For some reason, I can see a disqualification. With Tensai helping out Laurinaitis, and this leading to, I think this may be just a stretch of a Tensai Cena feud. No Way Out is in June, so we may actually see the Tensai and Cena match in June, and they just maybe want to just fill the spot. I'm not sure. Like I said, there's no history between them, so it kind of baffled me a little bit. Real quick, we're going to go. And recap Impact Wrestling. Just a couple highlights. Actually, we'll go to SmackDown here. We'll have time maybe for one caller, 347-884-8482, or participate in live chat. Be sure to do that. Throughout the night, we'll say some interesting quotes that's going on in the chat room. So, just a few highlights that I got from SmackDown. Ricardo Rodriguez is the man. There's just something about him that's intriguing. He did the sea chants. Eve starts to. We saw the big name tag by Teddy Long. Eve recommended to Laurinaitis that people start wearing name tags, which is interesting. Damian Sandow announces his in-ring debut next week. Titus O'Neil and Darren Young, I'm actually buying into them a little more. I think they have a little bit more charisma going on with them this week. Last week, and their finisher is good. It's kind of like a powerbomb clothesline hybrid type of thing. Jinder Mahal, we saw him again. He interrupted Randy Orton's promo, so, and he gets RKO'd, but I wonder, see, here's the thing, right quick, because we don't have much time, and I definitely want to get to this flavor of the week here. I actually wouldn't be opposed to an Orton and Mahal feud, just because Orton's already established. They have someone like Jinder Mahal on, you know, they have him on the roster. Like I said, over the limit's a throwaway pay-per-view. So why not? Why not have Jinder Mahal, you know, interfere Randy Orton and have a match, you know, at over the limit? It's going to be thrown away anyway. So, you know, it'll make Jinder Mahal, you know, relevant again. Saw Antonio Cesaro, a.k.a. Claudio Castagnoli from Ring of Honor. Ring gear was really weird to me. Entrance music was absolutely horrible, but his finisher was pretty interesting. He defeats Tyson Kidd clean. That's really all I got from SmackDown as far as last week. Yeah. Impact Wrestling, Open Fight Night, real quick about that. D-Von defeated Bully Ray. Kurt Angle defeats Anarchia. Looks like we may be seeing a Kurt Angle face turn slowly but surely. Robbie E defeated Alex Silva. Alex Silva was a part of the Gut Check Challenge. Someone from the Independence gets a shot to be a wrestler in TNA. Brick Tesmacher defeated Gail Kim in a non-title match. Looks like we're heading on a feud with them, like I mentioned a week or two ago. Samoa Joe and Magnus, they were chosen this month, Open Fight Night, to be the champions to defend their title. Dax defeated Mr. Anderson and Jeff Hardy. And we saw the Eric Bischoff celebration, and he ends up being in the porta potty. It was interesting. Open Fight Night, interesting concept, like I said before. It didn't live up to my expectations, but it was the first time, and I guess I'll just have to wait until next month. So, then we saw ROH TV. Caprice Coleman and Cedric Alexander defeated the Briscoes in a proving ground match. Now they are number one contenders to the tag team titles. So Rhino come back on TV. Looks good. The gore was great. He beats just a jobber, Vinny Marsiglia. Kevin Steen and David Richards face off, and we saw Roderick Strong defeat Adam Cole. So very, very, very... very busy week in the world of professional wrestling. A lot going on with the pay-per-view and just the swerves going on in the WWE right now, and then just the innovative tactic of the innovative concept of the Open Fight Night, and of course the hard-hitting action of Ring of Honor. So got about 10 minutes left, and we are going to go to the flavor of the week.
Okay, here we go, folks. This week, flavor of the week here. Brock Lesnar fought in five opponents I would like him to see. And after I did this, before I seen Extreme Rules, and after seeing Extreme Rules, I kind of had to alter some things here because I don't know if they're going to keep selling Lesnar this way as just super dominant. Like, it's crazy because when he first came, I still think he was more dominant then than he is now, even though he wasn't throwing and mounting people and throwing elbows and making them bleed within the first 30 seconds of matches. But here we go. I'll just explain this first, and then I'll go over my five, and I have a couple of honorable mentions here. I chose a couple of superstars here that are pretty much over and been around for a while because, one, the current guys on the roster that are up and coming or just on the cusp of that mid-card to top superstar, I don't know if they could hold it down against him. And, two, as we stated earlier, there's just too many heels on Raw and SmackDown. Way too many, and I'm sure Lesnar's going to be a heel for the entire year he's here. And plus, I think somebody like The Rock is a better person to put over some of these superstars like a Rhodes or a Del Rio or a Ziggler or a Bryan. I mean, that's four guys right there I just named, and they're all heels. So that makes it kind of tough. Like I said, after Extreme Rules and the way he was just dominant and just beating the crap out of Cena, I don't know how you play him up against CM Punk, and I don't know how he wouldn't dominate and defeat a CM Punk, like how you would be able to write that. And then that would just make the WWE brand and the WWE Championship look like a joke. So that wouldn't be good. But anyways, back on subject, this basically... my five is kind of a reunion tour for Brock Lesnar, I should say, from 02 to 04 when he was around back then. I started off here. First, I go with Big Show. Now, since Lesnar won't be at OTL in May, I mean, that's too soon for him. I'd probably do this one in June just so I could have Lesnar wrestle a big guy and he could defeat Show, and Show wouldn't have much to lose, you know. And this would bring back Show Lesnar's dominance again by beating a big guy, since, because I mean, technically Lesnar lost, even though he dominated the match against Cena, but this would give him all the steam back of being this powerful guy. And then plus two, with Lesnar and Show's history in the latter part of 2003, I mean, they feuded for about a whole year, him, Show, and Angle. And then they were both managed by Paul Heyman. So I would do that one maybe in June. You said it was, I think, Bad Blood, I believe. And then next on the list,
June,
I would do
No Way Out.
No Way Out. I would do... I would actually do in July Triple H. I know it's not a big four pay-per-view, but since it's the summertime, middle of the summer, you know, 4th of July, I guess. And then plus, Triple H can be back from his arm injury by then, so that would give a nice sell to the storyline. I would like to do it at a big one, but... SummerSlam for me. This goes to three. The Rock. I mean, you would have to do this at SummerSlam. Why wouldn't you? It would be the 10-year anniversary of the first time and only time Lesnar faced The Rock, and that was the first time he won the WWE Championship. I believe it was the Undisputed at the time.
Yep.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's the 10-year to the month. 10-year anniversary. Doesn't get any more nostalgic than that. And then I would have him face Kane. Now, I really couldn't pick a month for this, but I just went with Hell in a Cell because Kane is always going to be tied to his brother, The Undertaker. And we know that Lesnar beat Taker in a Hell in a Cell match back when Lesnar was around the first time. And plus, I can't see Kane being a heel for the rest of the year. I just don't see that happening. I think Kane would get stale. But they could somehow play that up. And if not a Hell in a Cell, you could bring back an old school, or as King would say, a throwback Inferno match. That wouldn't be bad. And then four would be, oh no, that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yeah, well, I guess I have 6, I'm sorry. 5 would be Randy Orton, and I would do this at the Royal Rumble. This is the perfect time for me, because this would take both of these guys out of having a shot at the main event at WrestleMania, because I don't want to see either one of these guys in the main event at WrestleMania. No disrespect to either one, especially not Orton. But Orton's been there before. Let's get some new people that have never been in the main event before at WrestleMania this year.
Yeah.
So, and then plus, these two, remember, these two are both class of 2002. So that's a pretty cool thing to sell up there. And then
real quick, they had a, there was a dark match back then with Randy Orton and Rico against Brock Lesnar and Ron Waterman. If anybody want to YouTube that, it's very, very funny. So
And then Randy Orton could, you know, with his speed and technicality versus Brock Lesnar's power, think they could play that up. That'd be cool. And then 6, which I know is supposed to be 5, but I'm sorry, I had to throw in the Kane thing. But 6, I mean, you already should know, WrestleMania 29. Versus The Undertaker. This is perfect because Taker was always, well, Lesnar had Taker's number. I don't think Taker ever beat Lesnar. I don't recall it. And then Lesnar will be on his way out with the contract being up. He can kind of pay it forward, and then Taker could get his redemption since it's Mania, you know, and the whole Taker doesn't lose at Mania thing. For me, it doesn't get any better than that. Now, I know some people maybe blast me because he's not facing any of the guys, you know, the current roster that's up and coming or whatnot. But I really just believe that Lesnar doesn't need that spot. So I would give that. If you're going to have somebody come back and do that, The Rock would be perfect. Yeah, those are those. And then just real quick, 4 honorable mentions. I got Sheamus is one of them. 2 big rollers. Sheamus has fans in this corner. Love to see that. Y2J, but this would only work if Brock was a face, bottom line. That's the only way I'd want to see it. I wouldn't want to see a face Jericho versus the heel Lesnar. But neither one of those guys I see turning anytime soon, so that doesn't matter. And then I know, even though I said I didn't want to see it, CM Punk, because it'd be kind of the Lesnar Guerrero 2004 No Way Out all over again, where Punk would have to pull off the monster upset. Then last one, Brodus Clay. Hear me out here real quick. Just hear me out. If Clay was to ever be a serious face, this could work. This might be what could make Clay into a serious face and put him over. I honestly believe so. Like, he would have to lose the music and the whole dancing thing, but he could still be a face. They're both athletic enough, and they're big powerhouses. But that's the only way. Only way.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah, that was very, very, very good. Very good. I have five real quick. Got about 2 minutes left to express mine here. I would start off with Kali in June, just to give Lesnar some momentum, just to beat the snot out of him, of someone to just, you know, feed to Lesnar, basically. That will lead to Triple H in August. Big Show at Survivor Series, Orton at Royal Rumble, and he would leave with Sheamus at WrestleMania, because I just don't see him as a really top player guy anymore, especially from what we've been seeing and what we saw at the pay per view. It'd be really hard to really build him up, you know, in that capacity to be a marquee guy for WrestleMania. So I think him and Sheamus would be good. Him and Taker would be good, but I just don't see him at that level. I'd rather see Taker and Cena. So, yeah. So, thank you all for joining us. Of course, every week, send us your emails at cravewrestling@gmail.com. Go to the Bleacher Report. Look me up, Chris Featherstone. I've got like 9 articles. Writing one. On Wednesday, today actually, on a birthday spotlight, there's something that I did with Kane on his birthday last week, and I'm going to continue to do this with different wrestlers. I'm doing a birthday spotlight on The Rock, so the 5 most memorable moments of The Rock. There's a lot to list, so we'll bring it down to 5. So I'm looking forward to write that. You know, we love your support, and we would definitely appreciate, you know, you giving us some love and support through Twitter at Crave Wrestling. Like us on Facebook. Of course, financially, PayPal at Crave Wrestling. Thank you so much. Once again, Pancakes and Power Songs theme song was played and played again. That's Eric Cross. ERICCROSS. He's on YouTube. So look him up. Thank you so much for joining us, and hopefully you have a great week. Bye. See you next week.